Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, and Dom is actually gone for the weekend, so filling in for him today, AJ Mass. AJ, how are you?
Colin, it is a pleasure to finally meet you, at least in the internet way of being in a podcast. It's fantastic to be here.
Hey, it's fantastic to have you here. And this, AJ, is your first time on the podcast, but regular listeners of RHAP will certainly be familiar with you. But those who are not familiar with you, certainly tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, my real job is with ESPN.com. I'm a fantasy baseball analyst. Trying to figure out a lot of fantasy sports is a big deal. People make up their own teams based on the real players' statistics in many sports, baseball, football, basketball. It's a big deal. And I'm the guy who kind of gives you advice and analyzes the game and breaks it down and tells you which players are doing well, which players you should start today, which players you should sit. That's kind of my real job. Beyond that, I'm also an author. I've written two books. I have one book out now called Yes, It's Hot in Here. It's about the history of the professional sports mascot. It's based on my own time as being a professional sports mascot. I was the mascot for the New York Mets for 4 years in the 90s. So I know firsthand what it's like to really be inside the baseball head, as it were. And my other book, actually, for Genius fans, I think would really love this as well. It's called How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, but it really is game theory and how the tools you use in figuring out and analyzing games can help you figure out and analyze life. Yeah. And I'm really proud of that book because I interviewed a lot of famous people for that, including Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, Janice Spenson, who writes for Once Upon a Time now, but also wrote for Buffy, and just Yao Man from Survivor. It's a really cool book, I think, and I'm very proud of it. So.
All the greats are in there, NDT and Yao Man.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Where can people go if they want to check that stuff out?
Just go to Amazon.com and look up those titles. Look up my name, AJ Mass, and in the author field, and you can find it. I don't know if there are bookstores anymore. So I would just do the online route. You could probably Kindle it, Nook, those kind of things.
Yeah, I heard somewhere recently that Amazon is the biggest retailer in the world. I think Donald Trump might have said this in the GOP debate, actually, now that I think about it. And they don't have a single store.
Well, I said a lot of things, but I didn't mean what I said when I said the things that I didn't say. You're fired.
Yeah, and just while we're at it, where can people be following you on Twitter?
It's very simple. It's at AJ Mass. Six simple letters for a not-so-simple guy.
There you go. Well, AJ, we are, of course, back today to talk about a lot of stuff pertaining to The Genius, specifically the newest episode, but I want to ask you a bunch of things before we even get there. The place we always like to start when we have guests on for The Genius is hearing your origin story and how you got into the show and what kind of attracted you to it.
Well, I was actually listening to Rob Has a Podcast. I appear on that, as you said, quite frequently, at least once a season, analyzing Big Brother and Survivor. And I'm on post-show recaps, doing TV with them as well. But I was listening to Ian Terry talking to Rob, and he had mentioned something about this Korean game show. And it had game theory, and there was math involved and all this stuff. And that was enough for me to at least check it out. So thank you, Ian, for turning me on to it. And I put on the first episode. I'm cool with watching things with subtitles, so, that's not an issue. And, once they started that 1-2-3 game and I realized the game theory that was involved, I was hooked instantly. I was like, this is a show for me. And I watched it, and I probably ended up blowing through that first season in like 2-3 days.
Yeah, I mean, exact same thing happened to me. And it's so funny now, kind of in retrospect, where you look back and at the time, the first time you watch the 1-2-3 game, it doesn't even take until that incredible reveal at the end for me to be, or for a lot of people, I guess, to be hooked on the show. Like you said, that just the game theory alone and how they, how much of that is just taken into consideration for each main match was enough to hook me. But now, even knowing what we know now, season one is like child's play almost by comparison. But it was like the most incredible thing ever.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And what I really loved about it was kind of the, it was such a slice of Korean culture as well. Just learning about, the deference to the senior people and that was interesting. And just, they kind of have this apprentice thing going on with the Sunbays and the Hubeys. It was fun to learn about it and to see, like, a game. Because if a game like this was played in the United States, I think you absolutely would have backstabbing left and right, and no one would think twice, or, you know, some there'd be, you know, alliances day one. And this was different. This was just a different pace. This was like, hey, we're all relaxed here. Let's listen to what the professor has to say. Let's listen to what Gura has to say. They're the older people. So it was much, you know, much slower in that regard, and much more relaxed. And I like the fact that they all took turns analyzing the game. Even the quote unquote dumb players were actually smart in terms of understanding the concepts for the most part.
Yeah, I think that's something we probably didn't talk about enough in any of our podcasts, but specifically season one, is that kind of insight that we get into Korean culture. Because I think that is like a really compelling thing about the show for a lot of people. I, for one, I am really fascinated by a huge part of the Korean culture. I think it's really incredible, not only what kind of a role it plays within the games, but just how it really plays a role in every decision everyone makes. Is like the differences between Korean and American culture really just stand out every single episode.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, just even at the end of that first, one, two, three game, when, you know, was it Mincio is with the three cards left, and she hands one over, and then she walks away for a second. And like, if in a, you know, in an American game, like, that would have been like, oh, you know what? And you're stuck in your last, mm-hmm. haha. And no, I can't do that. I feel bad. Like that,
yeah.
Like that would never, rarely happen in an American game. And if it did, we'd mock that person endlessly. But that was what you should do in these games. So it actually, you know, challenges my own views of, if I watch these shows. I mean, I've watched game shows my whole life. I was on a game show when I was in college. I was on remote control, so
cool.
I know. Yeah, I sang along with Colin. Not you.
I was going to say, Quinn. Were you there for the Colin? Was he there the whole time, Colin Quinn?
Yeah, Colin was there the whole time. The girl changed a lot. I was not there with the lovely Carrie Warhol. I was there with Miss Coppertone. I know what it's like to be on a game show and be in that environment, and how the cameras can kind of change you a little bit, and it makes things different. So I really love watching the TV aspect of it. And it you know, like I said, I was hooked from 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Did you win on remote control?
I have the distinction of being the highest scoring second place finisher ever.
Oh, wow.
In the history of the show.
How much did that win you?
I won a home version of the game,
nice.
I believe, and of course, a rockin' pair of British Knights.
Fantastic. I want to stay on something that you just hit on, which is like what we would see in an American version of The Genius. And I'm sure you had this thought, because everyone who watches The Genius has this thought, apparently, which is, I would love for us to get this show in America. And I had that thought for sure, too, at first. But the more I think about it, I guess, the more I feel like, I don't know how much I would want that, because like you said, I feel like while on Survivor, I would probably come in and berate someone for not sticking Jin-ho with the last card in the 1-2-3 game, because it is that like uber competitive environment with like super high stakes. But I feel like an American version of The Genius like would almost have an impossible time doing it like justice, first of all, to the Korean version, given just how brilliant the storytelling and editing and so on and the set design and everything is and the game design. But also, yeah. I just feel like it would be so much nastier than the Korean version, to the point that I would really not like it. I feel like there would be so much yelling and swearing and crying that it would be not even the same show.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to do it with celebrities. It would kind of have to be what replaces The Celebrity Apprentice, I think, in order to get anyone to watch it, because I don't think anyone certly on network television is going to do something smart. And this is a smart game. And I think network television and game shows in general is all about dumbing down. I mean, and participating along. I mean, even the toughest trivia games that come out now, it's always, we're only going to give you 5 questions in the course of a show, and we're going to slow it down so you have plenty of time to think at home. And it's boring. It's just dull because it's not fast-paced enough. So you'd have to use celebrities in order to get any eyes on it. And you'd have to pick the right celebrities. I don't think... It wouldn't be the same show. I'd like to see them give it a try, certainly, but the celebrities would also have to be smart, and I don't know. I mean, you know, yeah, you could get, Danica McKellar, let's say, who's brilliant at math, and like she'd be a perfect type of celebrity that we know her. And that if you get people like that, then maybe, and you know, and if you encourage them, show them the genius and say, we want to kind of do this, maybe it could work. Maybe,
yeah.
But they'd probably try to throw in Ryan Seacrest as the host, and you know they'd ruin it. I think if they tried it here,
right? I think that's the thing. It's like, hey, give me Danica McKellar, give me like Penn Jillette, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your boy. Then listen, I'm listening. But I feel like it would be like, they would say, hey, we're going to give you some Real Housewives or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and maybe one of them is fine, you know, if it's the right one. And if it's someone who turns out to be smarter than we expected, that would be great. You know, maybe Nene Leakes would, you know, has a math minor. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's possible.
Maybe.
But, yeah, if they started throwing down at Betrayal, I don't want to see that. I like the fact that you can have, you know, Sangmin do what he does for the first, you know, two seasons and always come back and bounce back for more, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess give me your thoughts. I know we've talked about just how you got into it in the beginning of season one. Take me through your journey of, like, marathoning all of the three seasons, like your favorite episodes and players and so forth.
You know, I actually, it's really funny, in the first episode, when Sangmin is, like, really the first person who kind of starts talking about alliances when he starts getting hooked into the older alliance there, and he just looked so odd, like he didn't fit in, and there was something off with him, and, you know, I later learned it's because that he was dressed up in a costume, like, that's not him, you know, he was not himself, but I picked up on that, so whatever it was, the body language, I picked up on that. And for the longest time, I thought the reason that everyone was so excited about this show was that the reveal at the end of the first season was going to be that he was Bandage Man. Because I couldn't believe that someone was doing that much, you know, undermining and stuff without being
incredible.
In on it. So I was kind of disappointed at the end when they didn't reveal that Sangmin was actually Bandage Man at the end. That's just, I guess that's where my head goes, like a scripting television. but yeah, I really enjoyed just watching the games. Did I have a favorite game? You know, when Open Pass, when Jinho did what he did, that was just fantastic. Just watching that whole thing. And just the growth of Sung Yu and how he kind of became like the power player in the first season, I started rooting for him as well. And just it became this really, really exciting first season. The finals, I didn't care who won. I just was like, and this is, you know, it's just like saying, this is only season one. Wow, I cannot wait.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to keep going. So that's kind of where I was at the end of season one. And then when Sangmin came back, I was just like, I was all in on Sangmin. And just let me just see how many times he can, like, screw things up.
Yeah, you picked the right season to be all in on someone.
Yeah, and yeah, it was fun. There weren't a lot of great games, I didn't think, in season two early on. But, you know, obviously once you started in with all the thing with Dewey and then the icon of the immortality and the when it was fake. I mean, that was phenomenal. That's to me the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. That may not, to paraphrase Joe Stapleton, that may not be the greatest TV episode ever. That might be the greatest thing ever.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, I have not had such an audible response of watching something on TV since Richard Hatch let go of the pole in the first season of Survivor. Because when that happened, I was just like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. And I have not had that reaction since. And I think I still put Richard Hatch first, but this is second in terms of wow.
So let me ask, when Hatch did that, did that trigger to you, like, that kind of game theory impulse of, oh, I'm piecing together kind of quickly now why he stepped down? They're both going to take him, and this way he doesn't have to vote out Rudy?
Oh, I knew in an instant.
Okay.
That was just like, I just didn't think anyone would ever do that. Like,
Well, when you're watching The Genius, how does that kind of mentality play into things for you? Are you the type who will, like, pause the game before it starts and try to figure out how to break it?
I try not to, because I like to be surprised, and they usually break it for me, or there's usually, you know, especially in the second season, there were a lot of prop things. You know, they started in with fixing the props, and that was kind of the thing. So I was like, well, I can't investigate that. So let me just watch and see where they go. I don't necessarily do it until the game is over. And try to look back and see what could have been done. But, you know, sometimes I'll have impulses and say, oh, I don't think that's not the right strategy. Oh, you're going about it wrong.
Yeah, there are times where someone can blatantly do the wrong thing that really jumps off the page, I think.
Yeah, you know, to me, it's a little bit like The Mole, when The Mole first came out, the Anderson Cooper original version, where I watched that and I was like, this would be an awesome game to play. It's not good TV. And And part of that is because I still think The Mole, you should tell us who it is at the beginning and have us in on it, and it's a better show. Because watching it when you know who The Mole is a far more interesting show. But again, they're not brave enough to do that.
So, well, they essentially did when they did that like reboot with where the fat blind guy was The Mole, the guy who looks exactly like a mole.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. Like,
I know, I do, yeah. Yeah,
The Mole always looked like more fun to play than to watch, and there are some times. And this episode that we're about to get into is another one where it was like, this is not real good television in terms of the game. It would be fine to play it, but it's visually boring, and I don't like, they don't do it too often, and so I'm glad they found ways to make, you know, rock paper scissors fun to watch. You know,
yeah. Quick hot The Mole take. Anderson Cooper, to this day, the greatest reality TV host ever.
I think I could probably get behind you on that. He was really, really good. I love the fact that he would just interact with the players on the fly. And yeah. I'm glad that Phil Keegan has kind of started doing that on Amazing Race, where he's like there as they run to the clue box. I think that is just adds an element to it that most shows are missing. And Probst is a different thing. Probst is part of the structure of the game. He's the bandage man. So yeah, it's a little different.
Probst is a whole different story for sure.
Yeah.
It always stands out to me. I remember, I think it was season two of The Mole where like one of the tasks was pouring a bottle of wine without spilling and the guy messed up. And then he was like, this is impossible. And then Anderson bet him money out of the prize pool that he could do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was fantastic.
So before we get into this new episode, let's hear about your thoughts on the cast for season four. Were there any big snubs that you wanted to see back, or what overall takes on this returning all-star cast?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you needed the returning champions, and so that part was fine. I personally, you know, I understand why I've heard from you guys why Hong Chul wasn't there. I think his type of personality, that you know, the comedy guy. I wish he had been there. I'm missing him and his enthusiasm. If they could have replaced him with Ha Ha even.
Yeah.
I know he wasn't technically on the show, but I love the Ha Ha episode. The only person I wish had been there was someone who I don't hear a lot of love for is Yunju.
Okay.
I think she would have brought a lot to the games. I think she was a much better player than the impression that was left by her failure at Monorail, where Dongmin just snowed her, was another awesome moment, because I did not believe. I thought, oh, we've lost Dongmin. That's too bad. And for him to maintain his cool and to just totally sell that was phenomenal.
The editors are so diabolical, where they hit us with the fake Dongmin goodbye montage.
Oh, well, the editors, yes. I mean, I've said this before, and in our Facebook group and stuff, like, oh my God! The editing on this show is the big star. It doesn't really matter who's on for the most part. 99% of the time, the editing is what sells these episodes. They're taking party games and making them compelling when sometimes there isn't a compelling storyline. And every time I see the 3 hours from now, fast forward, that like I just know we're in for something. And I'm disappointed when it's not there. And I think that's probably colored my feelings of today's episode.
Yeah, I mean, the only episode to, honestly, from any of the seasons that stands out to me as like a major oversight on the editing, and we hit on it when we podcasted about it, was Loyalists and Rebels, where they showed us early on that Dongmin was definitely a loyalist. I think even without that, like if I didn't know that for sure, I would have enjoyed that episode way, way more.
Well, and when I watched Loyalists and Rebels, I actually looked down. I didn't see that Dongmin was. So
oh.
I still actually was operating under the impression that he could have been, and so I actually agree with you, because I enjoyed that episode immensely, thinking that, oh, that's got to be the turn. That's got to be the turn.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the turn. But, I mean, yeah, it absolutely. I missed that he had revealed his card, and so I thought that was the turn the whole time, and it was great waiting for it. And even when it wasn't, it was just the fact that I was able to experience it with that in mind made that a fantastic episode. So I agree with you. They dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was because I knew he was a loyalist, so the whole thing was, well, there's got to be some kind of twist coming, so it has to be that Kyung Ran is a loyalist too. And then for it to not be that was just such a disappointment. But I agree agree with you in general that the editing is for sure the star of the show, even though it does, you know, we get people like Sangmin in particular, but also, you know, like Dongmin and Hyunmin and Jinho has gone on some good episode runs where they can take even something like those people give them incredible stuff to work with. But even something like the election game or whatever, or like Fish Shop this season, both of which were extremely straightforward in how they played out. And if they'd been forced to be chronologically honest and like upfront with storytelling, they would have been like 3s out of 10 on the episode quality scale. But because of the way they allow themselves to edit, they were two of the, I mean, election game wasn't that great, but Fish Shop was certainly one of the best game, best episodes ever.
Yeah, I think that it's always when you can steer us without, you know, they don't fix the footage. I mean, this is what happened. And you can steer us to thinking one thing and then you know, do that misdirect and suddenly reveal. And if you can throw a double reveal on top of it, I mean, that's why, you know, that's why when Dewey goes presents the icon of immortality and like, hey, I'm safe. Like, well, no, you're not, buddy. That second level is what made that like all time. Wait, you got another sucker punch? Hello.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, just quickly to roll through season four so far. Did you have a favorite game or episode of season four? But to this point,
I went losing Sangmin. I mean, today's menu is just a great farewell to him, and I loved it specifically because I think the editors played with the fact that we do love Sangmin and we don't want Sangmin to go. And when, I mean, it was cruel, but when they had that last minute hope, not so fast. He still has a chance to win. And then it doesn't happen. I mean, that broke my heart, and but it was great television. It was masterful the way they did that and just showed you the math even. They took the moment to do the math for you. See, well, no, really, if he gets this and he ties and he gets the 3 times, and then it doesn't happen. And to lose, and to use to K-Hound of all people, like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I love, by the way, when they do that, where they show you the math and they like, I think the big thing the show does well is they give their audience credit.
Yeah. Yeah. They usually are just like, say, yeah, here's the rules. And they're just like, all right, let's remind you the rules. And then they let it go. And, you know, occasionally they'll throw a graphic up to give you the score as it's going, but they expect you to play along. And I like that about the show. They don't dumb it down.
Yeah, definitely not. Before we move too far on, because I doubt he's going to come up too much as we talk more about this new episode, what was your general take on Sangmin? Like, where is he in the pantheon of all-time great reality players and characters for you?
It's tough to put Sangmin historically because I think Sangmin is playing with such a lackluster field for, you know, just in terms of he's the only one playing the game at his level. It's kind of like, you know, watching Derek on Big Brother or Derek Levasseur or Kim Spradlin Survivor, where like they... Were they great because they were great, or were they great because everyone else in the competition was so low? I mean, I still think that some of the reality moments he's given us on TV are so beyond just the lack of competition, but just really creative and just, you know, hiding under the table. I mean, God, yeah. I love that. Even though it amounted to nothing, just the thought of doing that in hiding in plain sight almost, it's just hysterical. You know, Dr. Will, in terms of Big Brother, with the whole... getting people to vote him out, like, say, vote me out, and they, no, we don't want to vote you out. Like, well, I'm a liar, I'm lying to you, but I'm telling the truth about the fact that I'm lying to you. Oh yeah, Dr. Will, he's great. Let's keep him. That is master manipulation. Sangmin was also a master manipulator. Richard Hatch, of course, from creating alliances from day one, just being the only one there who was playing the game and saying, no, I'm going to win this thing because these people are stupid and they don't realize they're playing a game. So I would say he's not necessarily even with them, but I'd say he's just a hair below Hatch and Dr. Will for me in terms of you know, setting the roadmap for games to come.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting. We've talked about Jinho potentially this season, kind of like it looks like the game has almost passed him by. And this episode, he really did kind of at least attempt to step it up. But I think it's really because like the footprint Sangmin left on the franchise, as Sangmin made it okay to just be constantly betraying people, basically, in seasons 1 and 2. And then in season 3, we saw Dongmin and Hyunmin kind of go with that, and now we have Junsok and Kyunghoon and everyone, basically, in season 4, kind of doing the... It's all because of Sangmin, I would say, that they feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah, I mean, if Jinsuk had gone in first episode season one and been devious and sly, everyone probably would have scolded him and you know, oh, that is not how you treat Hyun.
Yeah.
they would have poo-pooed it. And I think now this season when he does something crazy, now he's just, oh, he's a game destroyer, but he's not necessarily evil. That's the character you're playing now that Sangmin's gone. Okay, we see where you stand now. I think it's a different environment, and I think Jin-ho is still trying to play the game fairly, and I think that's kind of what's been his downfall this season, is that even when he tries to be devious in this episode, as we'll see later, it kind of doesn't work.
Yeah, but I guess long story short for me, Sangmin will certainly always be in that super mega elite pantheon, perhaps the greatest reality player I've ever gotten to watch.
Yeah, and because the genius is happy to bring him back, I mean, I'm looking forward to him coming back at least one more time this season in terms of returning, you know, bringing players back. You have to bring him back at least one more time to do something else. So I don't think we've seen the last of Sangmin on the genius to kind of add to the myth.
I'm sure he'll be back for the revenge match. And you mentioned him hiding under the table. Did you have any other favorite kind of like moments or favorite games of season four so far?
To me, the episode, obviously, that he's eliminated in today's menu, just the fact that they gave us that hope, that thin glimmer of hope that he would stay, and then, you know, pulls it out from under us. I mean, that to me was a phenomenal episode, even though I hated the result. But it was cruel, and the editors on this show do such a great job of telling the story. And there the story was that Sangmin's going home, and, you know, they're playing the sad music, and, you know, when Dongmin just said, "Not necessarily. There's still a chance." I was like, oh. And I didn't. Thankfully, I didn't look at the clock, because if I looked at the clock, I would have known that there was no chance. But just, that to give me the hope and then kill me with it. I mean, I, as much as I hated that episode, I loved that episode.
I totally fell for it, too, at the end. I was like, oh, here it comes. He's going to get out of it.
Well, because, you know, we had seen Dongmin kind of save his bacon, you know, in monorail with a move that should never have worked. So I thought, oh my goodness, is Sangmin going to even steal that accomplishment of Dongmin from him? And sadly, yeah, he did not.
Yeah. Did you have a winner pick, by the way, for season four entering the season?
You know, I didn't. I mean, I just, my heart was so into Sangmin that I was just going to root for him the whole way. And I didn't think there was a chance he could win. But now I just enjoy the ride. I have rooting interests, obviously. I like certain players more than others, but there's just so many good players here and fun players that, nah.
Yeah. I mean, I think you are right in a sense, where it really does feel to me like the season is lacking without Sangmin there, at least compared to what it was with Sangmin there. And maybe part of that is because, at least for me, it's always more fun when there are like double-digit people left. But it seems like no one, to speak of, like, Jinsuk has a few times, like, been willing to do his own thing for sure, but it seems like no one's taking those, like, creative lines and, like, super entertaining lines to disrupt whatever Dongmin wants to do.
This is true, and I think part of the thing that we're really going to miss Dr. Yoon-sung going forward, because I found that watching this episode without him, I think there was a lot missing, and it's not something that you actually even see. I just think having him there, I think he does a lot of stuff that the cameras don't necessarily capture or the editors don't want to show to us, but I think he's able to strategize and get the game moving in an entertaining direction. And without him there kind of pulling the strings, I don't think that we're seeing much opposition to Dongmin from the Jinsuk Jinmoon side that we would have seen if all three of them working together. I think it hurt this episode. This episode was kind of boring for me in terms of, you know, This is one of those episodes where you kind of know the boot order, you know who's getting kicked off the island, it's just getting through it. And I think it would have been really an upset if Jungmoon had not left this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Yoon-sung, I've said before, like, he's not just like a normal boring guy, but he is kind of like a normal interesting guy. And I think he does have a lot of really good ideas in a lot of the games, but I think his personality is such that it's, first of all, not like he's not like over the top showboating for TV or anything. And also, it just doesn't come across, even when he is influencing people, it looks like he's just kind of having a timid conversation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's thrust into the game with like these celebrities, and he took the step back in terms of presentation, and you know, but he wasn't awed by them. He just was like, okay, hey. And I think that kind of laid back kind of casualness doesn't read well on TV. So he's not good TV, but having him in the mix makes the TV better.
Right, he's good for the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, speaking of knowing the boot order, I have to come clean that for the first time in my genius career, and I am furious about this, and for a reason that I won't even get into because I'm just going to go off, I got spoiled on this episode. I knew that Jungmoon was going to be the boot, and thankfully I don't know any future spoilers or anything, but that really, really sucked for me this whole time. But I think let's get into this new episode now. Before we even find out about the game, we have Jinho and Kyungran come in, and they talk about wanting to break away from Dongmin, and Jinho in particular is feeling like Dongmin's really overshadowing him. And it seemed to me like something must have triggered this, right? Because it seems like even up to last week, he was more than willing to just kind of be in Dongmin's shadow.
Yeah, I mean, he comes in, he says he's nervous. He says, you know, that he doesn't want to be overshadowed by the charismatic Dongmin. And I think part of that is we're going to see later, is kind of Jinho's problem, is that he's self-aware enough to know that he's not charismatic. But the fact that he's right is what makes when all his moves later on in this episode kind of not come across with that same glee, you know, that evil that Sangmin does. You know, there's no twist because he's so half-hearted and blasé about it that it doesn't really quite come off right for the viewers. But I agree with you. I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe he, because of the shooting schedule of this show, you know, a few episodes have aired now. It's not like other shows where, you know, you go away for 39 days and come back and you're done. I mean, he's getting feedback. So maybe people are saying, hey, man, you know, you're number two again. You know, Dongmin's running the show. He's already being, you know, overlooked as a winner. They all make fun of him for stuttering. They make fun of the fact that, oh, yeah, you're one of those season two losers. He's like, no, I won season one. Yeah, yeah, no, you're season two. You're a loser.
Yeah.
It's an inferiority complex that just he can't get away from, even after having won the game season one. So I think there's a lot of that going on that I'm sure there's outside voices in his ear saying, you better make a big move or else you're going home soon.
That's actually a really good point that I don't think I'd heard brought up yet. Is that kind of external factors now that these episodes presumably have started airing, like we know they've started airing, but you know, when they were filming them, they're probably at the point where the early episodes were airing now. And people are starting to get to see more. So maybe that is exactly why, where even after things go perfectly last week with the five-way joint win, Jinho seemingly just turns on a dime and wants to come in. Maybe it is like outside influence. Maybe it's Doohee influencing him.
Yeah, I Doohee. Yes. But yeah, I mean, why not? There doesn't seem to be any. There seems to be like, you know, this tabula rasa when they come in, with the exception of the fact that they have to like intro the clips and say, hey, remember last week? Other than that, I mean, it seems to be like they kind of forget everything that's happened up to then in the season. It's like, yeah, he betrayed you in week two. Well, we don't care about that. That's gone. This is week, you know, this is week seven.
Yeah. You know, we deleted those clips from the flashback bin a while ago. They don't matter anymore.
Yeah. So there is a sense of them coming in with an agenda. I mean, I don't know the production behind the scenes of why the order is, of how they come in, you know, but certainly maybe they have a little interview and say, what are you planning on doing today? And maybe they send them in that way to help with that. And so maybe he said, yeah, I think today I'm going to be bold and I'm going to work with Kyungran. And you know, they realize they're in an alliance of four, this Friends of Dongmin alliance of four. And I think they're finally realizing that they're the bottom two. Mm-hmm. And Dongmin's not, he might protect them a couple more rounds, but after that he can't. And if they want to win this game, they kind of have to get rid of either Dongmin or Yunmin. And why not today, you know?
Yeah, maybe that was it. Maybe it was Jinho has known for a while, hey, it seems like a good plan to just kind of float on the backs of Dongmin and Yunmin for a little while. But at a certain point, I'm certainly not going to let them do exactly what they did in season three and just walk over us to the finals again. I need to, you know, at a certain point, plant my flag. And I think that may be potentially another reason that he came in this week saying, this is going to be the week. I finally need to make a stand here and start playing for Jinho.
Right, and it adds on that Dongmin and Yunmin walk in and like as brothers, and it's like, oh, gosh, see? It just reinforces that. There's one other thing that I wanted to mention about the pre-credits sequence there. How meta were they in this with Kyungran saying, we need subtitles if we want to watch this broadcast and understand it?
Yeah.
I was like, yes. Yes, we do.
That was good.
And then later on, Jun Sok with, who would have ever thought that Kyung-hyun would be in first place right now? Yes, that's absolutely true as well.
I love that they can do that. I love that, first of all, it's something we've talked about before, but I was talking to a friend of mine who doesn't even watch The Genius. I just talk to strangers, essentially, about The Genius at this point in my life. I love it that there is no host, that it is, you know, we have the Bandage Young, but it is left up to the players to talk about whatever they want to talk about pertaining to the game or the audience.
Yeah, and it's just that made me smile. The subtitles thing definitely made me smile. I think we need a screen cap of that for the Facebook fan group, because yeah. that just cracked me up, especially when we're waiting for Bum to do that subtitling.
Yeah,
and the raw feed's sitting there. We can't get it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into seed poker here now. That is this week's main match. And AJ, are you a poker player or anything along those lines?
I don't play poker, but actually... little known fact, for about 5-6 years, I was actually a dealer at an Atlantic City casino. And so I spend a lot of time in poker rooms dealing to actual poker players. I think that's probably why I was rooting for Vanessa and Mama Day this season on Big Brother. I have that affinity for that. But yeah, I dealt blackjack, I dealt poker, I spun the roulette wheel, pretty much everything except for baccarat and craps I would do. Pai Gow poker, I learned that there are 5 different definitions of the phrase, ay-ya. So there was that. And, you know, one of my favorite things in the casino, like, you know, you learn that people don't get odds and they don't understand for the most part. Yes, there are professional gamblers and there are some smart people, but like on blackjack tables, we'd have this thing called psychic but stupid, where the person would be sitting there with a 16 and they, you know, should I hit? Should I not hit? Should I hit? Should I not hit? And finally they decide not to hit. And the next card comes out and it's a 5 and they start screaming, I knew it. I knew it. Mm-hmm. And I always just go psychic, but stupid.
Yeah.
You knew it and you still didn't want it.
Well, it's like in poker when people tank call, and then as soon as you show them like the nuts, they say they knew it, when obviously they would have folded if they had known it. Yeah,
exactly. It's a fun environment. I mean, I'm glad I don't do it anymore because the hours are awful.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I that's why I really respect Dila Nuna, because she's really good at what she does in terms of keeping them in check. I mean, you asked me before who my favorite characters were. I mean, she's definitely up there.
Yeah, she had that fantastic moment this episode too.
The Kill Bill moment.
Yeah.
It's like, you do, you know, a dealer says, give me the card in a certain way. You give the card in a certain way. Oh, trust me, you do not want to piss off a dealer at a poker table.
No, listen, I have spent a lot of hours at poker tables with a lot of really bad dealers, and I can never stop praising Dealer Nuna for being impeccable as a dealer.
Hey, you do something like that to me, you're going to get I'm going to call you on every single string bet you.
I wish she would call string bets.
Well, that's kind of the atmosphere of this show. But I cringe every time they. And you a call? Would you like to bet some more? Oh, no. That's the way they do it. It's fine. It's the rules. I can get over it.
It makes me want to puke. Okay. Were you rooting for Davon, by the way?
I was. I love Mama Day. I think, when you're a dealer, you see things that other people don't. You really do. You see the table a lot clearer because you don't have a stake in the game.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully you'll get tipped no matter what, no matter who wins. And if someone wins a big pot and they don't get a tip your way, trust me, I'm calling it. Everything by the book on your ass at that point. So, I think she just played a little too hard too soon. But, yeah, I liked her. I liked her a lot.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess, you know, with kind of this poker things in mind, first of all, this is not much of a poker game. This is not a game of betting skill or anything like that.
No, we learned really early on that it doesn't matter. Jin-ho figures this out after the practice round. It's like, you know, first place, it just changes depending on who calls and folds. And it's really a game of information gathering. If you know all the cards, then you can work together to steer the action to let someone win. It's not much of, you know, you can't raise. So there's this, it's not like you can bluff your way out into a big pot. It's like you make a bet or you don't, and that moves the card around. So it really is whoever has the most information. With perfect information, and if everyone works together, you can rig this game so that, you know, you can figure out who's going to win and who's going to lose.
Right, yeah, I mean, especially when we're playing with a 15-card deck and every dead card gets turned face up before the next decision has to get made, when there are going to be like 9 cards face up by the time anyone has to bet, or I guess 8 cards face up by the time anyone has to bet.
Yeah, and you know, I will say this is the one time I think production failed a little bit because it was hard for me to follow. I watched this episode twice, the first time before you invited me on and the second time after to take notes. And the first time I think I just was so overwhelmed trying to figure out what the cards were. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I don't know what a 12 looks like. And even with the numbers on the bottom, they weren't there when I needed to see them. I'd like to have just seen the cards and been able to figure it out on my own. It just was hard to track. So I think production failed in that regard in this one. But, you know, watching it the second time, when I realized that this is a game of politics and it really doesn't matter who has what card, it was actually, a lot more entertaining. I probably, thought it was like a 2-3 episode the first watch. And then I watched it again and I'm like, oh, this is a 6 or a 7. Okay. There was a lot of good stuff going on. But I was able to focus on it more. I just wish they had taken that out of the mix, because I was so trying hard to say, is that a 13 or 12? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it probably wouldn't have been the end of the world if instead of using pips, they just wrote the numbers out. But it isn't, I guess, like standard practice for playing cards.
But yeah. I guess. But, because it's standard practice to have, fish and...
Like you were saying, this really is just a political game where even though it is going to be super high variance, especially when it's only 7 hands that are being played, it really is going to come down to when so much information is out there and there's nothing preventing anyone from talking to anyone else at any point during the game. So virtually everyone's going to know virtually everyone else's cards. This is going to be really easy for the fix to be in.
Yeah, I think... Jinho realizes this early on, and the friends of Dongmin do. I mean, Hyunmin's going around trying to get everyone's information, and like he thinks he's going to get a monopoly yeah. on that. And Jinho's like, no, I'm not sharing. And even when Dongmin pulls them in, Jinho's like, no, can we play the game for a little bit, and then we'll do the sharing. Let's have a little fun. Meanwhile, in the process of that, they're kind of agreeing to share at least some information. And you got Jungmoon and Junsak spending all their time coming up with this creative signaling system so that they can figure out how to secretly tell each other their cards. And yeah, it was clever and it was great using this base 2 system and fingers on the cheek. But at the end of the day, Jinho and Kyungran sit down and just show each other their cards.
Right.
It's just wasted time.
Right, when they're sitting right next to each other on the other end of the table, they can just, reveal their cards and they can hold it up in front of them for all anyone else cares. But it is really interesting, first of all, the seating order, because the turn, it doesn't change, but it does rotate. But it's so fun, the visual kind of layout of Jungmoon, Junsak, and Dongmin on one side, and then Kyunghoon in the middle, and then Hyunmin and Kyungran and Jinho on the other side, like a perfect kind of breakdown, even through a random draw of like the political standings within the game.
Yeah, you could not have scripted a better picture of what was going on. Exactly. I mean, the two sides of Jinho and Kyungran on one side, completely opposite spectrum, because they're in the mix, but they're not in the mix. And Jungmoon and Junsak are completely on the outs, but Dongmin has kind of like been protecting them and at least working them a little bit. So he's sitting on that side. I think it's just was hysterical to see Kyunghyun going back and forth between the two. And that's kind of been also kind of what's been going on, is that he's been kind of back and forth between Dongmin and Hyunmin, like that go-between. It was just hysterical to watch.
Yeah. I actually think it was possible that Kyunghoon drawing the middle seat could have been huge for him this game. And I know he drew the middle seat and ended up losing, so maybe not. But I think it could have been possible that if Dongmin and Hyunmin had been, seated next to each other and didn't need Kyunghoon as a go-between in some, certain spots where they didn't want to get up or whatever, or maybe the rules were that they couldn't for certain periods of time. I feel like if Kyunghoon was like on in the 1 or the 7 seat, he could potentially have just been like hung out to dry. But who knows? He really does seem to be playing like pretty well, generally speaking.
Yeah, I think you have a good point there. It's like his perception has always been someone who's on the outs and from the outside. And then the first few episodes, like he was on the outs and he was just begging to get in. He made that strange sound. He was begging and crying. It cracked me up. But, by being the middleman and being forced to, they had to, work through him and embracing him, it wasn't him trying to work his way in. He was already there. So I think that certainly Had the game played out the way Dongman wanted, he certainly would have been in a much better spot than if he had been, like you said, stuck on the end somewhere. Seeding definitely played a factor in this.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And it's not like nearly the same factor that it played. What was that death match called in season one where they had to pick out which picture was submitted by which person? It was basically like Cards Against Humanity, but with pictures, and it was super cheatable. It was like the most rigged death match.
Yeah. It was like the Dixit game. That's based off that game.
Right, I know there, what you're talking somewhere, about. The seat, you know, because Sung Yu got to sit next to Yoonji, it was completely over in her favor. Or like the chain auction where because they're chained together, they can't have side discussions with other people. In this one, they can get up and talk to whoever they want. But at the same time, when they are sitting there doing the betting, that's pretty inconvenient. So seat order really does make a difference.
Yes, it did. And it was fun. It was fun to watch in terms of when they decided to get up and go around and run away. It also cracked me up because Dongmin was spending so much time talking to Jungmoon and Junsak. And it was like, well, obviously everyone else at the table can see this. The fact that they were surprised that they were working together, or, you know, like Jim was like, yeah, well, you know, Dongmin is working with us. Like, well, obviously he's talking to you. So you don't really have to go over there and share that part of the information. So it was a strange dynamic, I thought, because it was clear that Dongmin was strategizing with them, or at least making them offers or something, telling them what to do. I mean, he tried to spin it off as, no, I was just doing what I needed to do to make sure I win. But I don't know. It was odd.
Yeah, to me, it's odd for sure, because it seems like when he's doing it in front of, you know, the friends of Dongmin, and he's blatantly just right in front of their faces negotiating with Junsak and Jungmoon, even if he's saying, oh, no, you know, I was just getting them to fold to me, clearly they're doing that because they feel like there's something in it for them. And that would at least make me uncomfortable if I didn't know what Dongmin was saying to them.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was a weird dynamic. It was also, you know, part of the one thing I wish they had done is just made this much more visually interesting game. I mean, most of the games, when there are these side deals and shenanigans going on, it's people running from room to room, and at least, you know, you're getting some sort of motion. Here, it's like seven people sitting at a table.
Yeah, I mean, I do blame you for not hooking up the ESPN World Series of Poker whole cam cards.
No, we only lend those out for black and white. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. So I think the really interesting point of contention early on is, if you think about the fact that there are only going to be seven hands and whoever is the lowest in chips at the end is going to be the loser, when Kyungran wins these first two hands, that means there are only five other pots to go around for six people, i.e. someone will be losing every single hand. And so if you win one hand, you're going to be safe from being the deathmatch candidate.
Yes, and I think that was probably the best thing that could have happened for the episode in terms of storytelling, because, you know, now Kyungran is safe. She certainly can't finish last at this point. So it puts her in a position of power, but I think she let it go to her head is the problem.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I think it's interesting for the episode because Kyungran wins the first two and then Jinho wins the next one. And that was like their condition for going along with the Dongmin plan. But then once they're like comfortable and safe, they're not so interested in the Dongmin plan anymore.
Yeah, I mean, for the whole first three rounds, I mean, Dongmin was just frustrated beyond belief. You could say, you know, the first round, she's like, can I win? He's just like, go ahead. Well, if you just wanted to win, just say you wanted to win. Like, just, no, I don't know. Just win. Go ahead. I don't care. We're all winning one. It's fine, you know. And you know, then when Jinho's like, oh, I have to win now. I have to win now. And Dongmin's like, it doesn't matter. We're working together, aren't we?
Yeah.
I think they just tipped their hand too much. And not that they wanted Dongmin out. They just wanted to run things, and Dongmin doesn't like when other people run things.
Well, I mean, I feel like in this case, and maybe this is Dongmin just being fantastic at making himself look like the victim whenever things don't go exactly his way, but I would say that Dongmin was kind of in the right when it would come to this. Like, Kyungran and Jinho are in the right as far as strategically. You definitely do want to be the people winning the early ones, so you can have a lot of influence and a lot of safety going into the later rounds. But I do feel like Dongmin basically gave them what they asked for, and then every time he did, they kept upping the price.
Yeah, it's very true. I think it just shows the mindset that Jinho came in with on the day. It was like, I'm gonna take control of this show. I'm gonna show that I'm number one, not number two, and he just doesn't wear it well.
Yeah. Well, Dongmin, you know, he has that discussion with his own, the friends of Dongmin, and then also convinces Jensok and Jungmoon to fold to him in round four. So everyone folds and he gets his win. And now the plan going forward is for Hyunmin, Kyunghoon, and Jensok to win so that Jungmoon gets frozen out. And Dongmin is like really blatant about this, telling virtually everyone but Jungmoon about this plan, because I guess everyone has to be in on it. But I thought this was kind of interesting. It's rare that we see someone like, I guess it's not that rare in games where you can really target someone and force them into last place a lot of the times, but it's at least been a while since we've seen like a middle race situation where from the middle of the game, someone's being worked into being last place.
Yeah, and I think it all comes down to the fact that the way she plays the game is this kind of, she's so not assured of herself and her own ability to play these games and win that she just can't help herself but to go and ask for help and to like get herself covered on all bases, and it only just fuels the fire to get her out because she's seen as a spy and unloyal, and that's exactly what happens here. Is that she's like, oh, you know, Dongmin was helping us, and like, what? And they knew Dongmin was helping them. I mean, it was visibly obvious. So, but the fact that she actually made an effort to go over there and tell Jinho, you know, Dongmin is really working against you guys, and you know, she got exposed. Kyunghoon tells Dongmin, and you know, at least he was awake for this conversation and not asleep at the table.
I think maybe this is more like Sangmin rubbing off on just the way everyone plays the game, where it almost like a precedent has been set, and the way the games have played so far this season, there have been so many super active players in a lot of these games, and maybe Jungmoon just feels like in this environment, she wants to get in there and she wants to mix it up, and hey, Sangmin would be trying to manipulate everyone and using everyone for his own benefit, and maybe this could be one of the running rules of the genius. If we get more seasons and more new players, particularly non-celebrities, I think it could be important to keep in mind, a lot like in poker, the number one rule is you are not Phil Ivey. In The Genius, you are not Sangmin.
Yeah, exactly. And if you are going to play the Sangmin role, you got to go all in. You got to follow through. Mm-hmm. You decide to betray, then you're betraying. And I think, you know, with K-Hound last week, when we saw him kind of like being the secret spy, and he went all in. He was secret spy through to the end. Jungmoon this week, she's going to be a spy, but she's like, to what end?
Right.
To stay one chip ahead of Jensok? I mean,
right. It was like, who are you even? It seemed like she's always just been spying for whoever is the most convenient to get her a token of life, which is, in general, not the worst philosophy. It just feels like in execution, she's doing it in such a way that, one, everyone is on to her, and two, everyone then doesn't want her to win and is going to pick her for the death match.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about it. If she helps Dongmin's plan and wins Dongmin's plan, who do you think's getting the token of life? It's not her. Mm. It's Hyunmin. We know this. He always gets the token of life.
Yeah.
You know, that. And if she sides with Jinho and helps him win, guess who's getting the token of life? It's Kyungran. I mean, she can't win in this. I mean, I guess, you know, at that point she's got to hope that whoever comes last doesn't pick her, but it just seems that's wishful thinking on her part, because she's making herself such a target where both sides are not trusting her.
Yeah, Dom brought this up, the same kind of idea up last week, about Jensok at the end kind of going with Dongmin's plan to what he didn't know was a plan for a joint win with five people, but what he thought was a plan to get K-Hound the sole first place. And Dom brought up, why does Jensok even care if Kyunghoon's getting first place if the token's going to Dongmin? That doesn't help keep him out of last place. And that's, I think, something people overlook a lot in The Genius, is it seems like they get roped into doing something that is better than their current situation for other people that they like, but doesn't really help their own situation.
The only thing that I saw in that, and I listened to your conversation, and I agree that it doesn't seem to make sense. The only thing is that Dongmin, generally speaking, has such a stranglehold on what happens in that game, mm-hmm. that if he tells someone to pick someone for the deathmatch, they usually would, I think. I think that's the theory. Like, you know, it's like, we made sure that this happened and this happened, but you should pick this person. Like, just there's a subtle influence there, I think, that maybe, well, you know, if I'm going to be vulnerable for the deathmatch anyway, maybe Donwin will say something that will help stack it against me getting picked. That's the only thing I can think of there. You know, since I'm going to lose anyway, it has to be the preface to that, however.
Potentially. And hey, listen, I feel like every single passing week, I just get more and more convinced that Dongmin may be the greatest leader in reality history. I feel like this guy can rally a group of either capable or, I'm not even going to say that there are any incapable players on the Genius, but it seems like he can rally anyone behind him.
Yeah, I think it's proven. I mean, I think the fact that, you know, he can play a game where we're trying to identify, you know, who the loyalists and rebels are, and he can just start with, I'm a loyalist, loyalists listen to me. And everyone's like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And not for a moment question whether or not he's a loyalist. Where,
well, like,
quite
what
frankly, why not? Why couldn't he have been a rebel?
No, it's a good point. I'm sorry I keep talking over you. But, like, we see even in these early, early games, like the fruit stand in Season 3, he's whipping all the watermelons into shape, and then the next week he's the citizen leader, and then early this year he's running everything in the ID exchange. Like, he can really, it seems like, any kind of personality types. Even when you have someone like Boston Rob has his detractors, the people that see through and don't really want to be just another one of his sheep or whatever, or like Troizan wasn't interested. Maybe that was after he got voted out. He doesn't like Kim or whatever, but not everyone necessarily falls under Kim Spradlin's spell. Whereas it seems like virtually everyone Dongmin encounters at some point is really happy to work for him.
Yeah. Well, he's a fun guy. He's entertaining. I mean, and you know, you see some of the secret scenes that get posted on Bum Dilemptus's site, like just he's. I mean, I love watching him interact with Dealer Nuna and just the stuff that you see where he's entertaining. So you know that's can't be underestimated in what's probably a very very long shoot day.
Well,
he's making people laugh. Of course, you want to hang out with him and naturally defer to him because he's always the one. I mean, I guarantee you. Well, not guarantee, but I'd be pretty sure next week when if he's the first one in with Yunmin, which I would hope for, because I just want to hear him just turn to him and it's like, you know, Jinho was a little bit uppity last week. I think it's about time we cut him loose.
Yeah, I mean, I think we are definitely the stage has been set for some kind of showdown at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I really, really think every single week Dongmin just continues to impress me more and more. So let's. I know you're short on time here, AJ, but let's keep going through here. Hyunmin puts in a lot of work here to lock himself up his own win in round 5, and you know everyone eventually turns out folding to him. I've been saying for a while. I feel like, especially after his performance against Lawyer Yunsun, Hyunmin will never be picked to be the deathmatch opponent. So I feel like in Hyunmin's shoes, as I've said many times, all I care about is just not being the loser in the main match, and I feel like I'm on to the next week. And this pot alone is enough for him to, in my opinion, be safe here every time.
Yeah, I think also on top of it, this round was the first time I saw in his eyes that he was like worried that Dongmin was like kind of leaving him behind.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, wait, why aren't you helping me? Why aren't you backing me? Oh my goodness. We need to talk quick, leave the table. I think there was a lot of that going on. I just think he wanted the reassurance that things were cool with Dongmin more than the win. I think he was pretty sure that he would get the win in round 6, as long as, you know, they didn't get betrayed by Jinho. But I think the bigger betrayal would have been if Dongmin had not steered it his way.
Yeah, well, I'm curious to hear your take on that. Obviously, they were the dynamic duo that completely ran Season 3. I've had a theory that they are totally on board for another Final 2 deal and have been since probably before the game even started. We haven't seen them shake hands again or anything or even talk about it necessarily on camera in Season 4. I'm anticipating many episodes from now, however long they're both still there, we're going to get that big flashback and see a bunch of stuff that they've been doing behind the scenes to specifically be helping each other. I think at this point we've probably seen them give each other the token of life probably 7 or 8 times between their 2 seasons.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a done deal that these two are set, that these two are locked in. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, it's kind of like on Survivor when you have the second chances, you know, these people know each other. They've seen each other. You know that people are going in with alliances that have been built over a lot of time. And mm-hmm. I think the same thing is here. They went through so much in Season 3 together, and formed that bond that walking in here for Season 4, they didn't have to say anything. I mean, they knew they were working together. And I don't think, whereas it might, you know, if they were trying to script great television and maybe, you know, trying to make a name for themselves, you know, would Dongmin like suddenly, you know, stab in the back at Final 3? perhaps, we know Sangman would do it if he was in its final two deal because it would be great television. But I think, again, we're talking about what this show brings as far as a snapshot of how people are perceived in Korean culture and how your performance on these shows does reflect on you in your real life. And I just think that they probably have this idea that, like, you know, if we work together, nothing is impossible. So let's do it again and, like, really, you know, force them to bring us back again for another season, you know, if there's another season, like, let's do it. Let's make history.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is just while I'm thinking of it, it's really interesting. I would not consider people who lost in the finals to have lost in like a regular round of the Genius with six people left. There are three people who have still never been eliminated from a round of the Genius in Kyung Ran, Dongmin, and Hyunmin in their entire careers.
That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
And also I just did the math on this earlier today. Through episode 7 of this season, Dongmin has now played in 18 main matches. He has gone to one death match, which is a better ratio than Sangmin.
That's very impressive. I think part of that is just when Sangmin goes bad, he goes all the way bad. but yeah, no, Dongmin's a great player. He's a master manipulator. He's certainly, once Sangmin left, he was pretty much could write his ticket to the final, unless someone stood up. I'm happy to see that Jin-ho is starting to stand up to him a little bit, but I just don't think anyone's got the follow-through here to stop him from making it to the final.
Yeah,
whether or not he wins, I don't know. Unless Hyunmin does something unthinkable, I just don't think it's in his nature to do it, though.
That's what I was going to say, is I feel like the thing with Hyunmin and Dongmin is I don't feel like either of them at this point has it in them to be the one to draw first blood from the other one and, like, send them to the death match or betray them in any kind of big way. I think just both of their personalities, first of all, and part of the culture and their reputations that they want to protect, it would never happen, in my opinion. I don't see that happening under any circumstances.
Yeah, I think there's two possible results to the season right now. Is they both make it to the final. Is the one result. The only way that doesn't happen, obviously, a fluke. You know, in the final three, obviously one of them has to go to the death match. So, sure, depending on what the final thing is, if it's a luck-based thing, because we've still got Quattro out there.
Yeah.
You know, sure, it's possible that that happens. But the only way that that doesn't happen is if next week or the week after, if Junsak just somehow does something to force them to a joint tie in bottom, and where they both have to go. Like, that's the only thing I can see that could derail this.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to take borderline it's impossible that they're both going to be playing against each other in the death match. They're not going to run a game, I don't think, that neither of them is obviously ever picking the other one over anyone else, I would say, at this point, to play against. So it would have to be a game like the King game where the two losers are like,
yeah,
you know, and I don't think they're going to run in a game like that.
I would hope they did, just because it would be interesting to see if the other players would take advantage of it and shoot for it, like recognize it and say, this is our only chance. So from a viewer standpoint, I'd love to see it. But you're right. I think they know that the first episode that does not start with Dongmin saying, Shingria, is going to be a very sad episode indeed.
I totally agree. And actually, I've been meaning to ask you, in your professional opinion, Dom and I traded, because I own Dongmin in both leagues of our fantasy auction drafts that we did. He owns Hyunmin in both of them. We traded in the $60 league. We kept our original person in the $150 league. We both essentially just diversified our portfolio. Did you like that move as a professional fantasy analyst?
I think any time that you can increase your chances of winning some money, you do it, and especially because it's good for your brand. I mean, this way you're both guaranteed pretty much to win.
I wouldn't go that far. But.
Well, no, I mean, if they win, you both say you win. It's not like you saying, oh, I won, and, you know, Dom going, oh, I didn't win either. Like, you both can say you won one now. So I think that's good for the brand.
Okay. All right. I love it. I'm counting that as a full-fledged endorsement.
Yeah. Good. You can take it.
All right. Cool. So round six, this is where Jin-ho really sticks his neck out for Jung Moon, because it turns out she's actually been signaling to him the entire time what she's been doing, kind of along the same idea of, it seems like she's willing to just spy for whoever is trying to help her.
Yeah, and, you know, I think she may be smart enough to see the writing on the wall and realize that, you know, there's two rounds left, and if I don't win one of these rounds, then I'm in trouble, so I'll help you win, and that'll keep me out of trouble, because I'm at least ahead of Junsuk. So I think she's really going into survival mode here.
It's hard to blame her, by the way.
Yeah, no, what's the worst that can happen? I mean, if she thinks she's targeted for the deathmatch anyway, then not doing anything means she's targeted for the deathmatch. So I don't blame her at all here. And at least this one was a one-on-one interaction. It wasn't in front of a group. It wasn't in front of any witnesses. It was like, you know, just pulling him aside and saying, can you help me?
Yeah. Well, Dongmin realizes that the only way to get around Jin-ho now winning this is the plan of Kyung-hoon and Junsuk winning these last two pots has to go out the door because they can't do it with their cards. But Dongmin can take it himself. And then we will go on to see he can also take the last one and go on to win and actually overtake Kyung-ran, despite being one chip behind here. But I thought this was really interesting, where it does get flipped, and now it's almost like circumstances prompted this kind of line in the sand now between Jin-ho and Kyung-ran, or between Jin-ho, Kyung-ran, and then also Dongmin on the other side, which I thought was really interesting. And one of, like, it's rare that we see Dongmin, we'll get him coming out of nowhere with some big move in, like, a flashback reveal, but it's rare that we see him, like, actively take steps against someone he's been working with closely.
Yeah, it was just interesting in the fact that the way this game was set up, that once somebody wins two rounds, that you now have the line to decide who loses. And the fact that Dongmin wasn't getting his way, and it wasn't like everyone didn't just immediately jump on board, just really, just he's not used to that. And
right.
I think it was more just, it was a shirt he hadn't worn all season, or any of its seasons. And I mean, not since, you know, the Constellation game when, you know, the tables were completely turned. You know, I think he's got that in his mind too. Is this my Constellation game again? I don't think I like that.
Yeah. Well, I think he kind of got through his Constellation game with the fish shop.
Oh, well, yes, this is true.
Yeah.
But I just think the whole, he's also very much, if he makes a deal with you, as long as you don't betray him, he's going to follow through. He's very loyal. I think he's earned the loyalty in that sense, that he's not Sangmin. If he says we're going to do the deal, we'll do the deal. And this is, you know, Jin-ho's actions are jeopardizing the deal he made, and he doesn't like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a very good distinction between Sangmin and Dongmin, which is he really does seem trustworthy, even across playing so many main matches and acting in ways that clearly just benefit him a lot of the time. He still can give his word and have it be meaningful. Whereas I'm sure if Sangmin was still around, everyone would take his word with a boulder of salt at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting, as you know, the whole point of someone winning two pots means someone's going to win zero pots. I think it's also incredible that Kyung-ran probably has to be thinking, after she wins the first two, that she's an overwhelming favorite for first place, because no one's going to win three of these, right, when there are seven people, because no one's going to – it seems like it would require a lot of collusion, and no one would want to go without winning one.
Yeah, but she's so paranoid, and I think the talks before round six starts are totally – she's her own worst enemy, because all they were saying is, look – let's do this and follow my plan. You're fine. You'll still finish first.
Yeah.
And for some reason, she's like, I want a guarantee. And like, Dongmin's like, you have a guarantee. You'll finish first. And I don't think it was that she didn't trust Dongmin. I think it was she really didn't trust Junsuk to not do something crazy.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, then have, you know, work it out. Let K-Hound win round six. And then there's no way John Stock can screw you in round seven, and you're fine.
Yeah, no, I think it is one of the, like, you're right, where her own kind of paranoia about getting screwed is exactly what led to her losing, you know, coming out of first place when Dongmin felt, like, uncomfortable to the point that he had to overtake her.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what happened there. She was her own worst enemy. And she wasn't able to express, or at least we didn't see her express, the fact that, okay, I'm on board, but we have to give it to Kyung-hoon. Like, round six. Like, I think Dongmin would have been fine with that.
Yeah.
I don't know if Junsuk would have been fine with that. But if he betrays you round six, then you can work on round seven. There's still a way to come back from it.
I feel like maybe Junsuk is playing – maybe this is incorrect on my part, but I felt like I got the vibe that he doesn't at this point even care that much about going to the death match. Like, yeah, that wouldn't be ideal, but if it comes down to it, he'll go in. Kind of like we saw with K-Hound, too, at the end of this. He said – Yeah, I'm happy to go in if it means that Dongmin ends up coming in first.
Yeah. I think it's he realizes he's underestimated Kahan, and he also realizes that the more loyalty he shows now, then the better chance he gets at being protected for the next few weeks.
Like, yeah, and we're probably also at the point where the deathmatch is a reality. Like, every single week that anyone goes in there, they have to think there's a decent enough chance that they might find themselves in a deathmatch in a few hours.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like on Big Brother, when you get down to Final Four, and the head of household has to put two people up, and sometimes people get upset that they're one put up. And it's just like, who cares? It doesn't make a darn difference. And I think we're close to that point where, like, look, the difference between finishing first and finishing last is so slim, and unless we can work together, you know, yeah, if four people work together for a joint win of four and you're number five, I can understand you being a little upset, but generally speaking, someone's got to finish last, and the variance is not great at this point.
Yeah, yeah. So round seven here, Dongmin, the plan is for him to win it, and preposterous run good here where he gets the five, and everyone who is helping trying to help him win gets one through four, and the seed card is 15. So if they just fold, he knows five will be the lowest card in play, and he will get the highest possible seed card. So that ends up coming in. Dongmin is your winner here for the main match because Jungmoon could have stayed in with her one, and that's what Jinho and Kyungran thought would happen, and she would get her win, and then Kyungran would go on to win the game. She ends up folding here, even after working with Jinho and Kyungran and signaling to them the whole time. What did you make of that decision?
This is the dumbest decision she could have made. And here's the thing. Jungmoon says that she's going to fold because she wouldn't have finished first place anyway and probably would have been taken to the death match. So at least by letting Dongmin have his way, then the plan for, you know, Kahan to take Jinho or Kyungran, his choice, she's safe. It actually is the opposite, in my opinion, because what she does is she screws over someone that helped her in Jinho, and it just puts another negative flashlight, she's not to be trusted, on her.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that then Jinho is able to say, yeah, I was working with her, and, you know, you should take her to the death match. She's still in the death match.
Yeah.
And even if she was passed over, Jinho is going to be really pissed with her now. You
right,
can't go all in on the plan. Who's she going to work with next week if she survives this, but after folding? Jinho will have nothing to do with her, because she screwed him over, because he wouldn't have made the big, bold move to bet and expose himself. Kyungran's not going to work with her. Dongmin's not going to work with her because, you know, she's not trustworthy. She's got no one to work with.
Yeah, she is almost, like, hoping to maybe win this one battle while guaranteeing that she loses the war.
Yeah, she has to win this, screw over Dongmin, and hope that he comes back and says, fair play. Hey, I didn't think you had the guts to follow through. You followed through. I think that would have been a lot more beneficial to her image in the game in terms of going forward. That, you know, people will trust her to follow through when she makes plans with them. I just think even if she avoids the death match here, her game is dead. And maybe she didn't have a chance to win anyway, but at least if she follows through with the Jinho plan, you know, you can say that, oh, I can use her as a chess piece, and she has a little bit more value.
Yeah, I think it probably could have been better for Jungmoon to just try to lay low, even if she felt like she wasn't doing everything she could to prevent herself from going to the deathmatch, which I think was kind of her game plan week after week after week. The same way I would say that about Kyunghoon early on, where he feels like maybe it's at the point where it's already almost a matter of time before he has to go to a death match, and he's just trying to get this current week of safety, and he'll worry about next week. I feel like Jungmoon could have potentially been afflicted with something similar there, where she's not seeing the forest for the trees.
Yeah, I think it's easy to do. I mean, it's easy for me to watch on TV.
Yeah.
I like you to do. But yeah, I just think you don't put all the wheels of a plan into motion and then not follow through at the last minute unless doing so gives you a huge benefit. And in her mind was, I don't get a huge benefit by doing this. I think that's the wrong way to look at it. You need the huge benefit to not follow through, not the huge benefit to abort. I just think she looked at it backwards.
Sure. So Dongmin does in fact end up winning this last round. Jinho and Kyungran feel pretty scorned, I would imagine. He gives the token of life to Hyunmin. No surprise there. K-Hound, of course, finishes in last place. And it looks like at first he's going to pick one of Jinho or Kyungran. And then we get this incredible flashback that we rarely see at this point in the episode, where Jinho, I thought, did a good job actually selling Jungmoon basically out as the traitor and avoiding him or Kyungran being picked for the deathmatch. And maybe this is something, if I were to like defend Jungmoon, she probably can't anticipate Jinho doing this good of a job of swinging Kyunghoon that quickly before he picks his opponent. But still, I guess the point being, really good stuff here from Jinho to yet again stay out of the deathmatch.
Well, and I think this comes down to the essence of Jinho, is that Jinho's sense of fair play is what holds him back in this game a lot, especially this season. And when he goes to Kyunghoon and says, look, I wanted to save her because I didn't think it was fair that we were all working against her at this point of the game, so which is why I wanted to give her a lifeline. But she screwed me over, and that's really uncool. I think it just came off as incredibly honest. You had to believe him because Jinho's not going to lie about that. When it comes to fair play, he's not going to lie. I mean, there's some scheming that goes on, but he's not a schemer in the sense of selling you a bill of goods. Like, if he comes out and says, yeah, I'm working with so-and-so, he's working with so-and-so. And I think that's why it came across as so powerful, and that it saved him because he was able to really be genuine, and his sense of fair play was really hurt, and K-Hound saw that, and he probably saw it as an opportunity to, I think he sees himself as that fifth wheel in the alliance of four friends of Dongmin, and why not get in with both sides? And I think he did that expertly today.
Yeah, I mean, really, really strong work from Kyunghoon there, and I think you are right. Like, there is a ton of value, and Dongmin is usually the one that I praise for exploiting this, maybe the wrong terminology to use, but there's a ton of value in being trustworthy and having a good reputation. Like, Jinho's word can be taken seriously, whereas if Sangmin comes in and says, oh, this is what was really going down, this is the traitor, it's everyone has to think to themselves, how could I possibly believe what Sangmin's telling me right now when he's trying to save his own ass?
Yeah, and of course, Jinho has to tell. I mean, if he had got in and goes, she's a traitor, then, you're lying.
That's a good point. So Kyunghoon ends up picking Jungmoon. They play same picture hunt. It is worth noting the rules did change. Initially, the person with more garnets would get the two-space advantage and would be able to choose that the other person had to go first, essentially giving them a three-turn lead and a massive edge in just doing the strategy that we saw Junghyun use in Season 2, where he just mimicked whatever the incorrect guesses were.
I don't remember what was chosen. And it's amazing. I try to do this, but usually I do impressions of players, and they're not speaking English, so I don't know if they actually sound like this in my head. It's hard with the language barrier. But
no. I think about that stuff because I'm sure there are people, maybe probably not many, but people that listen to me and Dom talk that are from Korea and speak English, but may not really hear the difference in our accents. And I'm sure that there are plenty of different accents that the people on The Genius have that we just have no way of differentiating.
I think you're right for the most part. Although I just have an ear for voices and things. So like, I watch the Genius with my 10-year-old, and like he cracks up because every time they come in and they go, Nasea! And they're like, is there an echo in here? Like, I do pick up on the sounds and the tones really well, but I just can't translate it to English words because I don't have the same keywords to say it.
Yeah. The point is there's the rule change so that no one has that kind of advantage. They're going to start at the same space. So there's really no huge benefit in the matching strategy. And it's interesting with that in mind, and having specifically Jungmoon and Kyunghoon being the players in this death match, they both clearly, and for good reason, feel really confident in their memories. So they take like the complete opposite approach to that initial strategy and just want to open up as much of the board as they can as quickly as possible in order so that they can like memorize it. And what this really comes down to is they both have perfect memories for something where they get that long to memorize it. And Kyunghoon's tiles that he got were, you know, they consisted of things that got opened earlier than Jungmoon's did. And that's essentially what this deathmatch was decided by.
Yeah, and I'm actually okay with that. I mean, look, you know, if you have the, you either have the skill or you don't. I think perhaps Jungmoon thought that she was better at the memory and she had an edge. And I probably would have thought so too, but I didn't realize that Kyunghoon went to Darren Brown's Memory Palace School of Memory. That was for you, Dom, an English, a UK reference. Darren Brown, there you go.
Yeah.
but I, you know, hey, it really did come down to luck at this point of where the tiles fell.
Yeah, I mean, I think they both thought they had the edge as far as memory, and I think they both could have gone perfect for it. If you show them all of the tiles, they could both get 50 in a row.
Yeah, and kudos to them. Kudos to them. I am 44. I don't remember what we talked about in the first 10 minutes of this podcast.
I'm 28, and neither do I.
Yeah, I have no short-term memory at all, and so yeah, I hate. These when Gull Hap comes on, I don't see them. I hate that game. I would veto that right away. And this one as well. Like if it involves memory, I'm fine in the Survivor challenges when it's like, you know, he's going to show me five items. I can kind of keep those in my head with a little song, but I can't do the okay, that's A, is this, and it's here, and she went. Once she turns over a tile, I'd be lost.
Yeah, I mean, in the Survivor Challenge, I don't even attempt to play along, and I just wait to show up for Sophie Clark to give me the solution on Twitter, and then Dom to give me his own solution on here.
Oh, I totally do the Sophie Clark method of the single letter and singing a song, and
like, yeah.
That's totally how I do it. But I have noticed that as I've gotten older, it's harder and harder.
I can't wait. All right, AJ, I will get you out of here in just a couple of minutes, but some very quick things. Parting thoughts on Jungmoon.
I think she's a very smart person. She's not a very good player, and I think it just goes to show that even in a game where knowledge is valued, and I appreciate that, you still need the people skills. You still need a little bit of strategy, especially when you're going to start throwing in people who are going to perhaps do something that isn't culturally recognized. So it's not comfortable to betray, and so. I don't think she's the type of person who can get beyond that. Even her betrayals were not really true betrayals. It was always spying for someone. It was never initiated by herself, really. And she just tries to please too many people, I think. And as such, there was no chance she could win this game. I think she lasted a lot longer than I thought she would. She's very likable. No ill will towards her, but I think yeah, this should be this elimination at this point is a victory for her.
Yeah, she was someone for me that I wasn't like in love with the first time. I didn't dislike her by any means. I was okay with having her back. I was totally fine with it. And I think she exceeded expectations. I think you totally nailed it, saying she's really smart, but she's not the best genius player.
Yeah, and I just think. I get why she was here, and you know she can you know, do pie. Great, that's wonderful. I would have preferred to have Ah Young. I would have preferred to have Yunju. I think they would have been a lot more into the craftiness and been a little bit more fun. She was very vanilla, Jungmoon.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, give me the scouting report to use some baseball terminology that I'm sure you've never heard before. on the six people that are left. I know everyone's got Dongmin and Hyunmin locked in at number one and number two. Who do you have between them at number one, and what would you say their like combined winning chances are?
Oh, man, that's tough. Well, like I said, I think there's the most likely scenario is, of course, the two of them going all the way to the final. So I would put that probably at 85%.
Wow.
I really think, and it's just the type of players that are left. The only way it doesn't happen, I think, is if Junsak and K-Hound get together this week and, you know, really make it three pairs of two and make it their goal to get rid of one of Dongmin and Hyunmin. If they don't do it this week, it doesn't happen. So I think that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, yeah, you can have a freak variance at some point. But if they can do that, then all of a sudden it really tips towards Jinsuk and Kahan. I mean, I'll reevaluate, but I don't think Jinho can win. I don't think Jungwan can win. I think it's 85% Dongmin and Hyunmin and maybe 13% Kahan and Jinsuk if they work together.
Yeah, I'm sitting here. I have independently done my list. I have Kyungran at a distant last place. I have Jinho at number five. I'm totally with you. I think Jinsuk and Kyunghoon are the opposition at this point.
Yeah, and I think next week it's going to be fun because you have the three pairs of two, and I hope it's the minus auction is what they've previewed as the game, and
yeah.
Assuming it's the same rules, I mean it's still going to come down to a battle of wills between three pairs, and that's going to be really fun to watch. And it's just going to be visually, it's going to be, I like them throwing the chips into the
yeah
into the pot. It's fun. I think it'll be going to be very interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, I've said before, I think Minus Auction may be my favorite game ever.
I love the way it came down to, you know, all of a sudden there's that point where, you know, it's like when you're playing where you gotta get all the spades to shoot the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay. I didn't want to lose, but now I have to lose completely.
And yeah.
It's when you make that shift and can people stop you? And there's an interesting strategy there, especially with the one missing piece of information. And that's what was missing from this week, is that all 15 cards were revealed. There was no missing information. So by forcing missing information, like if there were 16 cards in this game this week and you had pulled one out at random, we would have had a completely different game. And so I like the fact that they make it so that even if they all decide to work together for a little bit, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think entering this minus auction, I think three pairs of two, I guess three pairs,
yeah.
is yes. the perfect dynamic to have, where if it's any kind of majority versus minority or two groups of three, I feel like three pairs where they're probably going to be giving each other the tokens of life, but only one of those people can realistically win. Like, it's actually, if those, you know, genius trivia buffs will remember, the first time this game was played, it actually ended as a tie between Sangmin and Yu Young, but it is incredibly unlikely to tie in this game.
Yeah, it really is. And it's just becomes this war of attrition where how many garnets do you have? How many chips do you have? And how can I even bet anymore? And who will I share my garnets with? You know, it's like,
yeah.
It becomes fantastic. The first go round was really exciting, and it did come down to the identity of the missing chip, you know, the missing number. So
yeah.
I can only hope that we have a fast forward at some point to like just a lot of screaming and yelling. I don't need to see. Just something about that. I don't need to know what's going on. You know, did you ever watch Twin Peaks?
A little bit, but I'd never finished season one.
Yeah, when it originally aired, I'm old enough to have watched it originally. When it originally aired. When they came to the coming attractions for next week, what they did was they would just show three still shots overlaid with dialogue from different parts of the episode,
mm-hmm.
so that you had no chance of deciphering what was going on. And it was so exciting because your brain instantly wants to decipher what's going on. And that's what I think is great about the fast forwards. It's like if you just like when they were just all sliding their boxes across the table, you had no idea what was going on, but it was exciting because you're like, ooh, something exciting is going to happen. And just even the hint of something is going to happen, it just propels these episodes in a way that you just don't get in Survivor or Big
yeah
Brother.
I mean, not only that, but they use the flash forwards very deliberately to like mislead your anticipations, I would say, where they get you thinking it's going to be one way, but then it turns out to be some completely different twist.
Yeah, but even if that's not even part of it, like I said,
yeah.
Definitely in today's menu, I don't think there was anything that you could glean from the fact that boxes were flying across the table. But it just was like, ooh, something's going to happen. This is going to be a good one. Just having that, even if it amounts to nothing, I just think it just puts an electricity in these episodes where I just love it. I mean, I'm so glad. Thank you, Ian Terry, for turning me on to this because it's been a joy.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you. The genius has been fantastic. Who is your official winner pick if you have to pick between Dongmin and Hyunmin?
I think Dongmin. I think Hyunmin is just, there's something about him where he just is subservient. It's just in his nature to just defer. And I just, even though he, unless the games just happen to be like, you know, all these 12 Jenga type games where like he can solve them like immediately, I just think he will get flustered at the slightest hint of opposition. And I just think Dongmin gets in his head.
Okay. I feel like Hyunmin entering the finals, at least, like if they do get back to the finals, I could see him entering the finals really set on winning and like being actually confident that he can pull it off this time.
It certainly is possible, absolutely, and there'll be enough time, and we'll see who gets the help from their friends and whether or not it's slanted again or whatnot. But I just think Dongmin has just done such a great job of getting in his head, and to me that's going to be if they're the two. If Hyunmin gets to the final with anyone else, I can see him winning easily. So, like I said, for the show, I think the best thing that could happen is that Junsuk and K-Hound get Dongmin or Hyunmin out this week. And I think it would be better if it was Hyunmin just because it'd be more fun to have Dongmin trying to get revenge.
Yeah.
Than the other way around.
At this point, it would seem so strange to have an episode without both of them in it.
Although I will say, if Dongmin does go out and Bandage Man is there, eulogizing him, so we have... As he leaves, I just want Dealer Nuna to go, Shingria.
Yeah. I feel like if he gets eliminated or if he wins again, she has to do something to acknowledge him.
I feel like the
only way it won't happen is if he gets second place and gets kind of discarded.
Yeah. I would love to see him go out. I really would love to see him go out this week. We're suddenly all going, oh my gosh, K-Hound's going to win this whole thing, and like some sort of betrayal or something, and then she says Shingria and they hug and embrace or something like that. That would be an episode that could possibly go up the pantheon. It's one of my, if that happens, probably my number one episode of all time.
Yeah, I just want to find out in like 2 or 3 years that Dongmin and Dealer Nuna are married.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And incidentally, speaking of Kyung-hoon potentially winning this season, as we mentioned last week, Ian Terry got Kyung-hoon in our real money auction draft. The prize pool is $154. He got Kyung-hoon for 50 cents.
Like I always say in fantasy sports, once the season starts, it don't matter where you draft them as long as they give you the results. So
yeah.
I wouldn't go, oh my God, he got him 50 cents. It's just like, hey. Either wins or he loses. So although that's a great poll, it's probably a default poll.
It was like a comedy poll, too.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, while we got you here, Survivor winner pick for Survivor Season 31?
Oh, we're talking our second chances?
It's a little early.
It's a little early. Look, I don't know who I think will win just yet. I think that I got a pull for my boy Spencer, just because I've met him and he's a great guy. And in fact, he texted me as soon as he got back just to say, "Hey, I'm back."
Yeah.
Can't say anything, but I'm back. I think Spencer. I have a feeling Spencer did really well. It's just a gut feeling that I think he's going to be underestimated. And I think a lot of the older players are not going to be able to compete in this environment. I think Wigglesworth is in trouble. Just the new environment is just going to be too much for them. It's going to be interesting. I think a lot of it's going to depend on original tribes and how that draw plays
okay.
out more
yeah.
than anything else. Ask me again once we see the tribes, and I think I'll have a better feel of it. But I think he's in that sweet spot of being a K-Hound, really.
I really hope so. All right. Well, you guys can, of course, be following AJ on Twitter, at AJ Mass. Find his books on Amazon. AJ, thank you so, so much, man, for coming out here today. Anything you wanted to get to or anything else to plug before we take off?
No, I mean, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm honored to do it. I think it's so fun to have a place to discuss the genius because there are so few of us out there, but although our numbers are growing, it's just great. I mean, I was dying to just like, oh, can I talk to you? Can I talk to you? So thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry Dom isn't here, but would love to talk to him as well. Give him my best. And in terms of plugging, I mean, find me Twitter, AJ Mass. And again, if you really like game theory and stuff, my book, How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, has a lot of game theory in it. It's probably a little too heady for a lot of people. It's not about sports at all. It really isn't. That's just the end. So I would appreciate you guys checking that out on Amazon and picking it up, because I think you'll find a lot of really interesting strategies in terms of game theory.
Great stuff. Yeah, definitely do check that out. AJ, I guess the one thing I would ask of you, put pressure on Rob to watch The Genius, and then we will get a lot of people watching The Genius.
I know. I'll probably be seeing him at the end of September, and where we can all kind of, me and Mike Bloom, we can kind of put the screws on him.
Fantastic. All right, AJ, thank you so much once again. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back next week, and Don will be back next week. And that's it. Take care, everybody.
Chinguia! I push my seat in.